Great to have the Triple Premiership player, Brownlow medalist, Norm Smith medalist from the Geelong Football Club. He's a superstar. Jim, he's a very handsome man. Good morning.
Morning, gentlemen. Just getting my jacket off. It's hot in here.
Is it?
Well, that jacket's one of the biggest jackets I've ever seen.
Sort of Arctic-type conditioned jacket.
Like, you look like a Norwegian sort of naval man. Something.
Well, I'm glad it came to you pretty quickly. If you,
Whitey's gone what's real weird today.
Viking.
Norwegian naval man.
I'll take that. I don't know whether it's a compliment or a little excited. I'll tell you what's the world's coldest place, though.
What's that?
The hallways of aquatic centres.
Freezing. You know why that is? Because actually in the pool area, it's like a steam room.
Yeah.
And then when you go out, it's just a very different, it's a dramatic temperature change.
Yeah. I mentioned that to the little man out the back, and he goes, it actually brings back chills from your childhood. It could be 45 degrees, you're in an outside pool, it says somewhere like Mildura, and you walk into the hallway of the aquatic centre, the guy used the bathroom, like,
when have you been walking to aquatic centre hallways?
Well,
you've been swimming this morning?
No, swimming lessons on Sunday, so as my youngest, what was it, was a shark sighting in St Kilda, he was doing his swimming lessons, and he couldn't stop going, nah, which scared the other little kids, which is great.
What does he know about yours?
Oh, he loves sharks at the moment. I took him to the
Shark
aquarium.
Week.
Yeah, it took him.
It's
to
always
the
Shark Week. Shark isn't Week.
It? Yeah, I took him to the aquarium the other day.
Discovery Channel.
Yeah.
I've got a swim with the sharks voucher I've still got to use.
They should.
I've got a theory that they might
this
see
this
me.
This is where you can get to.
Has yeah, can't believe
you,
that.
So your youngest was at swimming lessons yesterday, or
both of them. So the youngest one, you still jump in the water, and his brother goes in the next lane, and he's the biggest hype man. His younger brother, he just yells out.
Well, this is of my eldest yesterday, who's 12, completed his 3K swim.
3K?
3K.
What do you mean? Well, without stopping?
Yeah.
What for?
It's just part of the whole sort of row of certificates that he needs to complete.
It's part of a swimming lesson sort of situation.
Yeah, he wanted to do his 3K.
He's like a bronze medallion. That sort of
that's a big effort.
That's a great effort.
There was a group that did their 5K swim yesterday.
12-year-olds.
Oh, well, you can be whatever age you like.
How long does it take for a 12-year-old to swim 3K?
He took 1 hour and 9 minutes to do his 3K.
So you just drop him off and sort
no,
of...
No, you stay and support your kids.
Tab and come
what, out an hour later?
What, out competing. In the bay? When they're doing a sport, you stay and you support
yeah, well,
your swimming kids.
Very boring to watch. They're just going up and back.
You're a hype man then on the side of the pool.
Yeah. Well, you drop them out in the bay and they're going to make their way in. Like,
No. Just in the swim, 25-metre pool. Paul Sadler there. Had some burnets.
That's a lot of tumble turns.
I'd go there for the start and pop back at the end and say, gee, you did well.
Remember you used to practice a tumble turn as a kid? Your head there 4 or 5. You end up upside down. You go, how do they do this?
And you get water up your nose. No, I couldn't do it.
No,
water's not my natural habitat.
You can swim with the sharks. It's amazing.
Have you ever been swimming, Waddy?
People pay to swim with the sharks. You should be paid to swim with the sharks.
No, they're really all, you
they're all
say,
fed up.
If I got given $1,000.
They're all fed.
If
fed
I was up. Paid $1,000, you wouldn't have me going into that sort of environment.
You'd have a tasty quad
probably
for him
10.
To join.
I just want to see you in the swimming pool, Waddy. You're one of those, you stand in the shallow end and just splash yourself, Waddy, in the water.
The only reason I go in there is for classic catches where you jump off the edge.
You'd be very bitey, Daniel.
That is my concern, that there might be a little seal activity in their eyes and they might want to have a bit of a nibble in the black wetsuit. It's not ideal, but we'll see how we go. One day I'll do it, maybe. We'll see how we go.
I'm going to throw something straight off the top to you, Jimmy.
Okay.
Because it's a text message. Yeah. Hi, lads. Who is in more trouble? Hawthorn or Collingwood?
Jeez.
Real Maradona stuff.
Yeah.
Where is my man, Maradona?
Yeah.
No,
that is still one of the great bits. Because I got the visual there. Oh. Like, clearly,
there's a little bit of Gil McLaughlin about it, too.
Oh, God, the visual of that is actually funnier than the audio.
I'm going to say, answer your question, gave me enough time. Good padding, gentlemen. I'm going to say Collingwood, just off the basis. When you have a bad year, you look forward to something, which is the draft. And they don't own their first two picks at the moment, Collingwood.
But they will get the best player.
Yeah, but it's going to cost them a lot in draft points. Here you go.
I think they got a lot of those points already.
Yeah, but you'd like him and some players to fast track it. You'd like to get in front of it.
Yeah, one player.
Well, they got those two first round picks last year. That's how they used them. So
So the next part of that question, Jimmy, is Hawthorn will hold, let's just say, picks 2, 21, 22, something like that.
Yep.
If you're Hawthorn's list manager, are you keeping on to Wingard, Mitchell and O'Meara, or are you thinking, while they are the age they are, we'll put up a hand and say, this hasn't worked, to try and hold on. Best chance for us to bounce back is to at least trade one of those three.
No, I'd hold on to them unless the deal is so compelling from someone else. Like, no one really pays overs anymore, and we've got probably one of the best here, Rammer, who he deals with this. This is his finals period when trade and free agency and all that sort of goes on, and you're swapping picks for players. Like everyone wants to trade their worst for the opposition's best. You know, everyone thinks they're getting Marcus Bontempelli for the list player number 42 when this comes up. It just doesn't happen anymore.
No, I understand that. But surely, leave O'Meara out to the side for a little bit, but even Wingard. Wingard came to the football club to be part of success. Now he's staring down the barrel with still his best footy. He's riding the sweet spot. He should be riding the sweet spot of his best footy in a deep rebuild. Surely he's contemplating, should I be actually moving on here because I'm not having success for the next 5 years?
You've just asked a different question there. So you asked if you're Hawthorn's list manager. Now you're asking if you're...
I'd be encouraging you if I was the list manager.
Yeah, I'm not so sure, because what's really difficult to find is half forwards who can go on ball and hit the scoreboard.
Correct.
Wingard's a brilliant footballer.
So if you're going to do the rebuild, which they're going through that transition, in 2 years' time, you're going to be looking for a Wingard. Look, who you've already got.
Yeah.
I get your point. I get it. Like, he's the dream of go to Hawks, I'm under Alistair Clarkson, they've won premierships, they've got, as you mentioned, O'Meara, Mitchell will be thereabouts, all that sort of stuff. Hasn't panned out that way, but, he's there. If you're on the Hawthorn list manager, as we said, I'm holding on to those type of players, unless the offer is so good. Yeah.
So Rama, has Hawthorn got enough time? Like, are they young enough that they can put up their hand and say, we actually stuffed this up? We wanted to stay in contention. It hasn't quite worked for us. We can actually trade them now and bring in picks while they've still got good currency? Or are they not stuck with them, but they're there now for the next 5 to 7 years?
I think right now Hawthorn's problem is their injury list, personally.
So you don't think they're as bad as...
No, I don't think they're as bad as... I've always been more up than down on Hawthorn. I think their core of players, their core of good players is good enough. Like, you look now, their two best probably younger players in Will Day and Granger Barras are injured. Good then you've players. Got Sisley, who's injured. You've got Gunston, who's injured at the moment. I know Sean Burgoyne's played 400 games, but he's injured that experience level. So they've got enough injuries in there to suggest that they're still going to be a good enough player. When you've got injuries, though, you've got to continue to blood those younger type players. Now, are they blooding enough younger type players? Are they putting those younger players in the positions that they're potentially going to play and be exposed in to teach them where they've got to get to? That's what I look at in a developing team. You look at North Melbourne on the weekend, they're putting their younger players in positions where they've got to perform. It's either sink or swim. So you look, Simkin, obviously now is an 80-game player, really well. Davies Uniacke, it was his best game for the football club on the weekend.
Yeah.
Quite clearly.
But they've got those picks, though. They've got those players, though, don't they, North?
Yeah, but the difference is, North Melbourne, we know, are rebuilding. Hawthorn, we don't know what they're doing. All we heard last week was Jeff Kennett talking about in 50 games' time.
Now, I agree.
What does that mean?
Well, Hawthorn a bit
is 50 games' time mean they're knocking on the door of the eight again, or does that mean they're competing again?
No, but I agree with you, Rambo. But my point is that Hawthorn has got the decision to make at the end of this year. Where we'll find out where they think they're at based on potentially what they do.
If you do what you're talking about doing, you're going to rip the heart out of your list to then potentially go to the bottom of the ladder for the next 5 years.
Mm. But they might be there anyway.
But I'm just that's what you're suggesting to do.
If I'm the manager of Mitchell, Wingard or O'Meara, I'm looking at my options because I'm not seeing anything in the next 5 years to get excited about. And the whole reason they went to Hawthorn was to be part of a successful
team. But you're having a bit each way with this question. You're asking it as a list manager, then you're flipping on its head from a player's point of view.
Well, but I think it's a win. My point is it's a win-win.
I want to ask Huff, because you watch the Hawks
You need, just one last one, Jim. You need good players to develop.
Correct. I wouldn't get rid of all three.
Correct.
But if one of those three wanted to go to get another first round pick, I'm looking at it.
But I think the question when I watch the Hawks, and half you watch them a lot closer than I do, it's the big boy stocks. Like I think decisions need to be made at the end of the year of who you're going in the next 3 years with. It's not, you're going to cop some pain next year, but then 3 years mapping out, when you put the old magnet thing, I feel like Dennis Pagan or those when they went and did the sales pitch. But who are you putting on the board? So I still don't think they're settled. Is Frost and Hardigan stopgaps as key backs?
Yeah.
So then if that's the case, you're looking at key backs in drafts or...
So Granger Barras is...
Granger Barras is that.
Yeah, which
he will be a good player.
Yeah, which
there's
is
no
right.
doubt on that.
And I agree with. So you're starting to answer that riddle down back for the key backs. But you've eventually got to make a decision. And I think it's Kaczynski is one.
Yep. As a key forward.
Are you going Mitchell Lewis?
Jekka.
Which of this group are you really going to put the 3 years into? Like, that's theirs, and are you going to go forward? And also, you need a transition with the ruck, because big boy is still playing good, solid footy, but 3 years down the track, how old does that make?
35.
Yeah, so I think it's... I'm not saying it's bad. I just think they've got to start answering their own questions with the big, tall boys, because... I think I'm with Rammer. I think Day's going to be a super player. Granger Barras. These three mids that you talked about, they're not that old, and they've got talent. Yad back, I think still Bruce is a super player. Yep.
Sicily's the one that they're really missing at the minute.
We've seen enough from Giath and Hardwick. They're going to be very good players for a while.
So Wingard's 27th and is 28 in July.
Sicily's 26.
Amira's 27. Fine. Who was the other one? Tom Mitchell.
Mitchell.
Tom Mitchell's also 27. Fine. So they're all 27.
Gunston's 29.
Hmm?
Gunston's 29.
Gunston's 29, yeah.
See, I thought Gunston was a bit older than that.
No, he's 29.
30 this year. 30 in October.
They've got an interesting list, because the reason I asked the question about Collingwood and Hawthorn, it was a text message, but I think it's a good comparison, because Collingwood's best players, particularly in the midfield, are their oldest players.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas Hawthorn's best players are still mid to late 20s. So I'm talking about Pendlebury and Sidebottom.
Right.
Yeah.
But Crisp is still young.
Yep.
Dacos is still young. Adams is still young. There's one I'm missing.
But the feeling with Collingwood is that Sidebottom and Pendlebury both have to play well for Collingwood to win.
Yeah, but Pendlebury, I think now will be transitioned to a half forward flank. And I think he'll play another 3 years probably.
Is that
role? Sidebottom can go and play on a wing anytime he likes, because he can still run.
He could play as a forward and kick 50 goals.
Yeah, he could. So I don't think those two guys you're saying, well, they're going to be out. But Collingwood, Taylor Adams will take over. When he's back, he'll take over that midfield.
Yeah,
it'll be his midfield.
So, Jimmy, you saw this game. You broadcast this game, Sydney and Collingwood on Saturday.
Yes.
30 points was the margin in favour of the Swans. They were down handsomely at quarter time and then found a way back. How did they do that?
It was a pretty scrappy game, because it was blowing a gale up there at the SCG. I think when Sydney made the adjustment of taking the ball forward, I know that sounds oversimplifying it, but in the first quarter, Collingwood were really good in defence, and they cut out all the exits, which forced Sydney to kick the ball backwards, sideways, laterally, which allowed Collingwood's defence to get up the ground. So I know metres gained can be a bit of a funny stat, because if you kick out from fullback, you have 10,500 metres gained, because you run 20, just bash it long, there's 80 every time.
Often they run about 50 metres before they bounce it.
But the team distance... For the first quarter, Collingwood was in front by 300 metres. Every other quarter after that was about 600-700 metres in Sydney's favour. So they were actually able to play the territory game really well. And in those conditions, territory was important. And then they were able to mark the footy really well. Young McLean took 6 contested marks.
He's showing a bit, isn't he?
Yeah. Marks it at the highest point. He's pretty strong. He's good if he gets caught under the ball. He doesn't then get shifted forward.
Yep.
Which he's got a fantastic frame on him. He doesn't get moved out from underneath it.
So Collingwood kicked 4 goals to 2 in the first quarter.
Yep.
And it looked like they're playing with a bit of dare.
Yeah, the first goal is, I thought, sorry to cut you off there, Ram, I thought, oh, clearly the message here in the week is, let's get some overlap and run. And it was noticeable, because everyone was coming from behind. I think it was Crisp coming up through the middle, handball, overlap. And then after quarter time, it was like, we stuffed one up. Let's not do that.
That's what I'm getting at. So was it more... It didn't feel like it was a message from the coach's box to slow it down. It felt like guys, when they made a mistake, they went into their shell a little bit and thought, oh, I'm going to go into protection mode here to protect my spot almost in the team.
Yeah, Sydney dialed up the pressure around the contest, which forced that quick kick out. And we know if you do that against the Swans, they take back shoulder. Thank you for playing. And then off the back of it, they've still got some guys with ball in hand, aren't fantastic. Collingwood through the middle of the ground. But they defended super well, and that's always Collingwood's strength. Their back six has always been really, really strong. They've got good structure, and they try and build their side around that. But it was the four-goal margin was probably reflective of where I think the young groups for both of them are. So Sydney's young groups are 18 months, 2 years more advanced than Collingwood, who are all newbies, really. Yep. So McInerney, who had a super game, he's been there a couple of years. Wicks has been there on their list for a couple of years. McLean, second year, where you compare that to Poulter, Henry, McCreary, even Darcy Cameron hasn't played a lot of footy, but he's been on the list for a while.
Yep.
It's just 2 years, four goals.
Yeah.
That was the difference.
You look at guys at Sydney like Warner and Rowbottom.
Yeah, a couple of years on the list.
They're maturing now. They're playing significant minutes in significant positions.
And the reason we had the conversation about Collingwood and Hawthorn, it wasn't to whack Collingwood and Hawthorn, but it's about that list management strategy. And Sydney is an example, 2 years out of the eight, and it looks like they're going to be back again, which shows that's the sort of, if you're developing the young kids well, that it can only be a dip for 2 years potentially.
Yeah, but they weren't forced to trade Kennedy or Parker.
No, they didn't go that way. So they were lucky, not lucky, they had the academy.
It helps when you get Campbell and Goulden.
Yeah.
So, when you don't necessarily have to draft them, you bid on them and you've got the points ready to go. Yeah.
It's pretty handy. Like Hugo Hagen at the Bulldogs.
Yeah, it's pretty handy. Yeah.
So that's the Swans. We're talking about the Magpies. We mentioned the Hawks before, but the Kangaroos are 32 points down.
North Melbourne. So
it was very funny at the start of that song.
Hearts to hands to hands.
Yeah. When somebody yelled there, "How's this go again?" When they started to circle up for the song. It was very funny.
It's good.
But they played unbelievably well to get back from 32 points. Whitey, you touched on this before, that it would have been quite easy to throw it in and say, bloody hell, it's not our day again, it's all too hard. Down in Tassie, not our home ground in Tassie, different venue, and the Hawks were up and about.
I thought that was the most impressive part about it. I mean, yes, they played well, but the character of the group not to sort of say, too hard today.
Well, this is going to be funny. I'm going to answer your previous question about Hawthorn and use North Melbourne as the example why you wouldn't trade them out. So if you were doing the same question for North Melbourne, you'd probably say, Ben Cunnington, would you take him while he's got value, like trade him out? But the proof is why you keep him is because you surround him with Simpkin and Davies Uniacke as the other sort of beast around there. And the knock-on effect, it's like, and again, changing games again, is Buddy Franklin allows McLean to get an easier matchup just by being there.
Yeah.
Ben Cunnington allows Davies Uniacke and Simpkin to get a better matchup around ball because he's there. So if you've got Wingard, it allows whoever young, developing, small forward to get a better matchup, because if he's not there, the best defender then goes to a young kid and brains him. And
Ken Brockman can't get a game then. Yeah. He doesn't get a kick.
Yeah.
His name's not Kent.
So I went around in circles three games, but going back to North Melbourne, have you seen clearance numbers from three blokes like that before?
Never seen it. 37 between three of them. 13-13.
How does that happen?
For Cunnington and Simpkin, 11 for Davies Uniacke.
You know, as a player, when you get them beaten, particularly around the ball, you know when those guys are getting a hand on the ball and you've got to do something about it. I don't understand why Hawthorn players, one, couldn't do anything about it, but also the coaching staff couldn't do anything about that.
Surely identified after the first 15.
Well, you look at that.
We need to change our structure. Do we need to bring an extra number in? Do we need to play, almost ring it and go, if we're going to lose it? So Melbourne did this really well. So Carlton actually won clearances, but it was such a misleading stat yesterday. I was at that game. I know we're going to go back to it, but I need it for this example. You can win clearances, but it's like inside 50s. You can have inside 50s, and then you can have really good inside 50s. Carlton won clearances yesterday, and they were just jammed on the boot.
That's right. There's a difference between contested clearances and uncontested clearances.
And scores from
contested stoppages. Contested clearances, if you're just bombing the ball, Jim, what you're talking about,
dirty ball.
Worth nothing.
So that's what Hawthorn had to identify. Kangaroos were getting it. And look, Ben Cunnington, knowing his ability and knowing what he's really good at, he's so good at drawing that first one and then releasing the handball. So the guy he releases is in the space. He looks up. But if it's not there, he literally goes and seeks someone out and goes, have that.
I'm coming at you.
Which is, go, oh, I think I've got a broken sternum, thanks, Ben.
He's got a firm hand.
Yeah, he knows how to draw
and
create the outnumber in close. It's great to watch.
So just to emphasise your point, Simkin and Cunnington had 50 contested possessions between the two of them. Now, marrying that up with Mitchell, who you'd think is Hawthorn's best contested player, he only had 3. So, and he clearly didn't have his best game, but even when you look at, we were talking about this earlier with half, the fact that Warple played almost as a half forward, he only had 16 disposals, but only 8 contested possessions, and even O'Meara played a lot forward as well, coming off injury, he had 11. So it was just a domination by North Melbourne with their two key playmakers.
It was a great result. That was the coach's birthday in Tassie, where he's born. It was a perfect result for David Noble. After a tough 8 weeks, they got one on the road. Well done to the Kangaroos, 7-point winners over the Hawks. We'll get to a break. Jimmy Bartel is with us on the Monday Footy Review. There's a heap more to talk about. Don't you worry about that. Round 9 was interesting in many respects. We saw some really good games and a couple of crap runs.
Knocking on the door.
No, don't start with your knocking on the door.
Propaganda machine.
Door to the outhouse.
Welcome aboard The Breakfast Club.
They identified that themselves, you know, that they understood that Zach was getting sat on pretty hard, but which we understand. I think Zach, you know, his discipline and his ability to keep applying himself to the game was really important. You know, I think the stuff around the ball, you know, I think Zach can take, but I think you know, there's a few incidents off ball which, you know, we were able to get free kicks for downfield and hit the scoreboard, which I think's, you know, it's good to see those frees get paid for the off-ball stuff.
That is the voice of Ben Rutten. He's the coach of the Essendon Football Club. And they are sitting 3-6. And according to Adam Ramanaskas and the propaganda machine around here, they are knocking on the door.
Just kicking it down, I think he said.
Of the final 8. Talking about Zach Merritt there. Got tagged yesterday by Caleb Sarong. Kept him to 21 disposals. A little bit of off-ball treatment. Justin Longmuir answered that sort of line of questioning and line of response from the Essendon coach by saying, I reckon his players looked after him pretty well behind the ball, saying that what was good for the Goose was in fact good for the Gander. And Essendon's 7-point win over Fremantle yesterday at Marvel Stadium.
That's coaching 101. You've got to get one of those away every year. It's like a little, use the AFL term, tick the box. Senior coach, come out, find your best midfielder and go, he's got to get looked after, doesn't he? We've already heard it from a couple of coaches this year.
That matchup of Merritt and Sarong was a really good one.
It was a great duel.
Yeah, it was a great, great duel. Both of them, Zach worked extremely hard, and Sarong, to his credit as a young player, would have learnt an enormous amount.
In an uncharacteristic role.
Yeah.
No one would have expected that, I don't think.
What, Sarong to go with Merritt?
Yeah, well, Sarong has been hunting the ball this year.
Yeah, this year.
It's a different role for him to learn. I think it was a great coaching move.
But I thought, when he first started, I thought it was really good by Longmuir last year. Put him on a number of really good players. I think it's been really good.
It's great for a young kid to do that.
Yeah. So I reckon from the start of his career, he's done it. Yeah, I'm with you. They've sort of let
in
him
recent times
freewheel, but I think they've gone, do you know where he's really good? He's playing on and off his direct opponent. It's not a tag, but it's a starting point.
Yeah.
So what was good about the Bombers yesterday, Rama? Tell me why the Bombers are knocking on the door.
Yeah, come on.
That game went just back and forth. Yes. Yeah, so now Fremantle probably wasted a lot of opportunity going forward. Their efficiency going forward to centre wasn't probably the best. And Essendon also, I think wasted some opportunities going forward. But what I liked about the Essendon performance, they just stuck at it. You know, there was moments. I think the game came down to moments in that last quarter. Nick Cox came on as a sub and was really good in that last quarter. The way he played, he set up behind the ball.
Yep.
So Fremantle were bombing it out of their defensive 50. And then Nick Cox, he had 5 possessions in that last quarter and continued to push the ball back in. Tip and Woody, I think, now, this is not propaganda, but he...
It might be. It sounds like it might be.
The fact you said that.
No. Is this with a... But with all due respect.
He's in now... the better small forwards in the competition. Like, he's kicked 22 goals this year. And he's
That's a lot of goals.
He's doing a really good job. He's obviously averaging more than two a game, so helping out Cale Hooker there. Cale Hooker didn't hit the scoreboard yesterday. But again, you look at Essendon, and I say this week in, week out, you look at what their young players did. Harry Jones had his moments again yesterday as a player. Archie Perkins had his moments. Nick Hines been a terrific pickup for the Bombers.
Did you think that was possible, what Nick Hines done?
I didn't think he had the ball-winning ability. I thought he was like an impact player. Like, clearly, if he gets it 15 times, he's going to open up the game. But I didn't think he had...
Get it 30.
30.
And use it well.
Yeah. The move of Laverty as a defender has really worked. It's
even James Stewart was okay.
His career, Stewart
hey,
was
propaganda
good.
Boy. You sound surprised.
I'm surprised. Absolutely, I'm surprised with what Ben Rutten's done with remodelling players. It's working.
Can I ask Propaganda Boy? He made a good statement about McDonald, Tip and Woody. Like, one of the best key forwards in... Key small forwards in the game. What's been the change? Is he just reflective of Essendon's ball movement? Is he fitter? Is he just converting? No. Is he going to better places?
He's fitter. Because you notice... It's clearly noticeable that he gets to more and more contests now. And that's a big thing. The other one, too, is obviously Darcy Parrish. We saw him probably come of age a little bit in Anzac Day, but he's continued on with that form. He was comfortably best on ground yesterday. He was a terrific player.
He's been comfortably best on ground a few times this year.
Yep. So, but I think Fremantle jump on the plane last night, probably thinking that's one that they should have got.
Well, yep. Justin Longmire was shattered after the game.
Well, to have them miss some easy ones, some snaps. Walters missed a really easy snap. There's a couple of occasions that last quarter where they just should have scored and they didn't.
Fife still got glad rap on the goals.
Yeah.
38% he kicked out yesterday, Nat Fife. Yeah. He had 16 kicks. 38%. He's a better player than that.
It's a great still photo. I think it's Michael Wilson who takes all the great photos of him actually at point of impact when he's having a set shot. And it was exactly what we're talking about. Back. Yeah, all the power's getting driven across. Mm. His leg is so far across. But I don't know if some players hook across and that's the finishing spot. But
there's no perfect footballer. Every footballer has some sort of kryptonite.
Well, you're sitting next to one.
There's also Ramo.
Lee Matthews was me. Was close.
Lee Matthews is pretty awesome.
Pretty close.
Coleman. There's a bit with Fife, though, that it wasn't so much yesterday, but he's so worried about it that he's just taking blind shots from anywhere just to try and take the pressure off and get a goal out of congestion as opposed to, like a Max King situation from the other night.
In a low-scoring game yesterday, 68-61, it was still a good game of football to watch. The ball went back and forth, and in the end, Essendon won the moments.
Is that sustainable for Essendon? So you go back to Essendon-Carlton. That was two teams who just knew each other were horrible on transition.
Yep.
And it turned out Carlton converted better off the turnover. Is that the way they want to keep playing Essendon, though?
Well, they'll set up much better on transition yesterday because of Laverty, because of Francis, because of Stewart. They had some actual coverage there, whereas Hines gone. Like, he's, they're effectively playing five defenders, even four defenders, because Ridley goes as well.
Because the next question I'll lead into is, with that sort of style, if they were to run into a Melbourne or a Dogs, even the Tiggies, so it's good off turnover.
Yeah. Tricky. Look, very tricky. Mm. Because you need your midfielders to transition back hard, and that's probably the one area that Essendon don't do. Zach Merritt does it well. He gets all the way to halfback, and he does help. The others, McGrath's getting better at it. Parrish is getting better at it. I think once they can become really good at it, Jim, I think that's when you'll see a more consistent Essendon.
I think the interesting part watching that game yesterday, Jimmy, was that Essendon and Freo are the two sides that are in a similar phase of development. Yep, Fremantle are maybe a little bit ahead. But I reckon in 5 years' time, those two teams will be two of the better teams in the competition. But Essendon matched it with Freo in the midfield. Freo had Jera. We talked about
Sarong
with this Brayshaw, Mundy, all these sorts of things. Whereas Essendon have still got to add to that midfield, Caldwell, Scheel. That midfield group's looking quite nice. They still might need a contested beast, but generally speaking, their midfield looks like they've got a pretty good one for the next 7 or 8 years.
Sounds like propaganda to me.
I won't say anymore.
Please. Propaganda Boy's got a really nice kid on. Are you doing lunches for Essendon and things like that? Finals lunches.
Are Fremantle getting better? Are Fremantle improving, Jim? Well, anyone can answer that.
There's a lot of
Maradona. Maradona's getting a lot of runs here today. Yeah.
They should have won the game, in my opinion, yesterday, Fremantle, with the opportunity they had. But they butchered it going forward on a number of occasions. Butchered the ball going forward.
They've gone from 4-2 to 4-5. Yeah. They're a bit unlucky in that they had the fixture change. They've been away for quite a while. But there's still a massive difference between what they do at home compared to what they do away.
Yep, that's fair.
That's probably fair. We'll just go back to Friday night very quickly, Geelong and St Kilda. St Kilda should have won that game of footy. Does anyone disagree with it?
Yes.
Okay, why?
Because part of football is you've got to kick it.
I understand all that.
And maybe Geelong would have played it differently if they were...
Well, would they? Would have been 3 goals down.
Yeah, and they would have maybe played differently. So I'm not sure. Geelong didn't play very well, and they don't play that ground very well, which I'm not sure why.
It wasn't a great game of football on Friday night.
No, well, of course it wasn't.
Well, it's only because St Kilda missed the first 8 shots that they should have kicked. Like, it's that was such a blow
to
them.
It's a massive unforced error.
Massive. Now, the Cats, we know...
What's Max King kicked now?
Team.
He's kicked 13 goals, 18, I think 4 or 5 out on the full he's kicked so far this year. Now,
it's like Nick Revolt all over again.
Yeah, he kicked 1 goal, 5. Now, again, there's probably a flaw in his setup. Now,
how much is mental?
But he needs to go on now. You got to take your career in your own hands. If that's his kryptonite right at the moment, go and get the best of the best. He's obviously got a relationship with Matthew Lloyd from Halebury when Matthew Lloyd was his coach. Lloydy was an unbelievable kick for goal, unbelievably accurate.
Did a lot of work, Lloydy. Enormous amount of work
Lloydy did.
Spoke to him about this. He said, early days, he said, you know, the mechanics, the ball drop was a bit loose, like at impact. Just went and put hours of work into it.
Matthew Lloyd and Scotty Lucas put hours upon hours of work into their goal kicking.
No quick fixes in that.
You could see with Max, though, the more shots he had, he was rushing even more. Yeah. He was getting back quicker.
Yeah,
you could see his eyes darting left, right and centre.
That's the game. He would have been front and back page news, because you look at the rest of his game.
He's terrific.
It's unbelievable. Fantastic.
Yeah.
He can do it all. Contest a mark. He can do all the other stuff. But the reality is he's getting paid to kick goals.
They've been, like, if you take out Max King, though, St Kilda have been a bit like that in recent times. They seem a bit nervy, a bit tense in the way that they play.
Well,
they take that characteristic in quite a few of their players.
Well, Membry's another one who gets a bit jumpy in front of goals. And as soon as Max King started missing, you could see him get jumpy because he had to be the one that kicked the goal.
It's a couple of easy game ones in first quarter.
It's drop marks as well, and it's not just the goal kicking. There's a few of them that get just a bit tense.
I'll give a positive too. Jack Steele, who had a fantastic year last year, All Australian, best and fairest. I think he's actually elevated his game again. I know we always look for players who, you know, sing about young players who elevate their game. The fact that he's hitting the scoreboard now, I think he's added that too.
More rounded player.
Yeah, more rounded, more dangerous player. Like, it's coming off the back of best and fairest and All Australian, but he's a legitimate threat going forward now. I think he's a goal a game. Yeah.
He's dropped his possession rate a little bit because he's spending more time forward because he does hit the scoreboard.
And you could add Cam Guthrie to that conversation, who has improved his game. Was best and fairest in a grand final year, but he's improved his game again. He's Geelong's best mid.
He's unbelievable.
He's out of contract.
He's fantastic, Cam Guthrie.
It's just interesting when danger comes back, Jim. Like, right now, Guthrie's the go-to sort of player around contest. He goes and finds the football.
He and Mitch Duncan are working really well together.
Correct, yes. How does that dynamic change when danger does come back?
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, but I agree with you, Whitey. It's like Duncan and Guthrie know each other's game so well. Duncan's so smart. He knows whose pocket to ride in.
What a beautiful distributor of the football. Yeah. He plays that role better than anyone, I reckon.
You have a look, Guthrie, he always have almost more handballs.
Yep.
But if you have a look,
Friday face-off.
Oh, I heard that on the way. gloating all the way through. But Duncan, he's made a career out of and so smart of just where to sit.
Oh, he's fantastic.
He gets his distance right.
Yeah,
Duncan. Like he's never really in close for that short amble. I'm going to be under pressure a couple of meters away.
Next layer, isn't it? Yeah. After the contest,
he knows where it's going to go next almost better than anybody.
And then the knock on from that is Tom Hawkins knows Mitch Duncan's getting this, and he's going to kick it to me.
He's going to kick to me every single time. Yeah, every single time. Did it dampen your enthusiasm for the Cats as flag favourites?
No, but it had question marks as to why they don't play the venue very well, because even Joel Selwood referenced it after the game that it's not a place they play well, and I don't know necessarily why.
But they still win.
No, I know that.
Yeah, I know, I'm with you.
But is it because they get worried about games with a lot of speed, so they make it a real messy game so they can't be exposed for a lack of speed? I don't know the answer to it.
What they did to West Coast and to Richmond.
I agree with you.
You can't play like that every week. Like the best teams can't do that. It's impossible. I know we want to see it every week because we love that style of football, but that was just a grind win. Get out of Marvel Stadium. Get back down the highway. I think they've got Gold Coast at Cadinia Park.
Gee, that could get ugly.
We'll get to them after.
What's the weather forecast? If it's anything over 15.
No, it's nice.
Just bank your win. Bank your win and get out. Melbourne yesterday, bank your win, get out
that
of there.
That will be bruise-free football on the weekend.
There might actually be some infighting for Cats players. Well, who can get to what matchup?
Stuart Jew's comments after the game were very interesting.
We'll get to them. Stand by. Anthony's on the line, on the open line, 1-300-652-927. Hello, Anthony.
Hello, boys. Hello.
You sound dejected, Ant.
Lost my voice screaming at David Teague so much, I suppose, but he can't listen to me, so I don't know why I bother sometimes. But, just some of the decisions yesterday by the coaching staff at Carlton, just baffling, boys. I mean, you got Will Setterfield, who's out of form, went to the reserves, they use him as an inside midfielder, then comes back in the team, and they deploy him as a half-forward flanker on the wing. I mean, I just don't understand it. You got Cripps, who's banged up. You know, why wouldn't you give him a rest and use your Dowls and the SPSs in the middle to give them a crack and see a good run at it? And then, you know, the icing on the cake is poor David Cunningham, just when he flourished as a midfielder, does his knee, but then you find out after the game he was going to be deployed as a defensive forward on Jake Lever. I just don't get it. Why do we do this for? And sorry to ramble on, but the last one is, why Tom DeConi didn't play yesterday? And you could have said to the kid, go on the best ruckman, mate, jump over Maxi Gawn, run around with him and see how you're going, because I love Pitto, the Italian warrior, but he just doesn't do it. So it's just some of the coaching decisions just really baffling down at Carlton.
They're an interesting watch at the moment, the Blues, for those reasons and a few more as well. And the expectation, I suppose, coming in is why we talk about Carlton the way we talk about, I reckon, Remo.
Sorry, what was that caller's name?
That was Anthony.
Anthony makes a very interesting point, particularly the Will Setterfield. And we'll just use Will as the example. So he goes back to the twos, plays as an inside midfielder, and then comes back into the ones and plays as a half-forward flanker. So which one is it? If you go back to the twos, play as a half-forward flanker, if you're going to come back into the ones as a half-forward flanker. So when you go into the ones, you've got this great confidence that you know you can play in that position. We see it all the time, Jim, with players that go back. They just, clubs and players are to blame as much as this. I just want to go and play in the ball because I want to get as many possessions as I can. But it's not necessarily going to help you when you go back up to the next level if you haven't played.
Well, not if you're playing that. You're not playing that position.
Correct.
It's a waste of time.
Correct.
You might feel good about yourself, but you're playing a totally different game.
It's something that players and teams have to get right with those players. Like, Will Setterfield should be in the Carlton team every day of the week, but what's the role?
Once again, Carlton starting outside and they don't win. You look at who they've beaten, which is Essendon, Fremantle and Gold Coast, and who they've lost to, Port Adelaide, Melbourne, Richmond, Collingwood, Brisbane and the Bulldogs. Collingwood's the only one that you go...
Correct.
But that was early in the season when Collingwood was playing better.
Correct.
And Collingwood was a strong favourite in that game.
Yep. So but their losses...
They are what they are.
You wouldn't have tipped them against Richmond, round one.
No.
Collingwood, you might have, round two. Port Adelaide, you wouldn't have round three. Brisbane, you wouldn't have round four. No. Although they should have won that game. The Bulldogs, you wouldn't have tipped them. They probably should have won that game. But you wouldn't have tipped them coming into the year. In Melbourne, you wouldn't have tipped them.
But, Jim, that's...
So, they're actually not really behind in terms of what you might have thought. Maybe one game. Maybe Collingwood.
Let's do the... Who had them in the eight?
No.
Well, I snuck them in.
Mm-hmm. But that's the improvement, though. We wanted
Carlton
to see
propaganda boy
conflicted,
conflicted, heavily conflicted.
We wanted to see that little bit of improvement. They could have knocked off one, maybe two of those teams. You're going.
I'm going to be a Carlton supporter. Could have.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah,
no,
we could have.
Yep.
Fair. Let's come back to it.
Fair.
Let's come back to it. Thank you.
Can I have a go at answering Jimmy's question?
What was the question again?
About who does it say more about?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it says more about the Western Bulldogs because the Bulldogs have had a fairly favourable draw up until this point, and their big test was against Richmond, and they failed that test. Only just, but they failed that test. To go on the road and beat a top four team from last year, I think it franks the fact that they are a much better team this year than they were last year.
What about you, PB?
Propaganda boy.
Propaganda boy.
I think Port Adelaide. That said more about that.
Don't we know what they are? That they are flat track bullies?
Whoa.
Well, what was Saturday night?
That, again, a team that turned up the heat on them in the contest. Port Adelaide don't go away with the victory. It happened against West Coast, it happened against Brisbane, and now it's happened against the Bulldogs.
That's what I'm getting at. It says more about them moving forward into the year rather than the Bulldogs going, it's a terrific win, no doubt about it. But if Port want to be actual contenders, that's three times now, three failures.
Did it surprise you that it happened the way it did for Port?
It did, because they haven't learned their lesson. And good teams learn their lesson. It only takes one lesson, and the good teams then go, okay, that's not going to happen again.
Daniel Sun, put your coaching hat on. I'll ask you differently. If you're Ken Hinckley and you've won a lot of games, you've won a lot in good style, good fashion, but as Whitey was saying, you've met another top four, you know, a boy on your level.
Yep.
And you sort of haven't come through. What are you doing, coach?
Yeah, I'm going through why. I'm absolutely forensically going through why. And because they should be better than perhaps they performed on the weekend. I thought they were relatively disappointing. I do agree it said more about the Bulldogs, in fairness, and they were fantastic. But I thought Port were relatively disappointing. I'd be digging into why, I must admit, if I was the coaching staff of the Power at the moment.
So they've had four tests, the Port Adelaide team. They've come up without the 4 points on three of those four occasions. The one where they did stand up was against Richmond in that really good game at the Adelaide Oval.
Yep.
I just wonder whether they're a bit light in the midfield. It's a question.
Well, that's without Dersmer and Butters at the moment. Yeah, it was always going to be an issue.
Rockcliffe, who they chose not to play early in the season, now is injured. But they might just be a bit light there against teams like the Dogs, who have got a plethora of midfielders.
Yeah, but this is the thing we're learning, that you've got to be able to sustain, perform, because you're going to get injuries.
Yep.
That's just the game.
So it's your depth of your list.
Your depth is important, and be able to play those roles. And this is why we keep coming back to Richmond and saying how we admire Richmond for the way that they play.
Exactly.
Because regardless of the fact that they have the most decimated midfield in the history of football right now, they still find a way to win. They get players to plug the hole, plug the gaps, play the role, and get the job done.
Well, they found two more on the weekend.
In dramatic circumstances.
Liam Baker we already knew was a player, but as a midfielder now, he can play that role. But Collier Dawkins looks a player. I know he didn't have a lot of the ball, but what he did with the ball on Saturday night was critical. What, he kicked two goals in the end, Jim? Two critical goals.
Like Port weren't horrendous, but I just thought, they were. I mean, I've picked them to win the flag, and I'm looking. I'd if I had my chance, I'd change my selection.
Well, what happened to that?
What do you mean?
To review.
Now, you can't review. Once you're in, you're in. It's like
we're
going to
review our top eight.
Locked in. Locked in. Once you're in, you're in. Eddie Maguire, millionaire stuff. James in Ivanhoe. Hello, James.
Good, fellas. Love the your broadcast and your show, fellas. But I just want to know if the AFL, have they lost the original rule book for AFL? Because I'm sure it states in there, when you've got the ball, you've got to release the ball by either hand or foot. Now, whatever direction come down to the umpires and not pay holding the ball, or incorrect disposal during the week. Well, I thought it was just going to be Friday night, but they did it right through the weekend. It's disgraceful. And next thing you know, the crowd won't be able to go ball anymore because they'll take the freaking thing out of the game.
I must admit, the last couple of weeks, last two weeks in particular, as a neutral watching games, I very rarely notice the umpiring and that sort of stuff. But I have noticed it in the last couple of weeks that... And to answer your question, they have changed the laws of the game. You're no longer required to legally dispose of it by hand and by foot if you have no prior and make an attempt.
But what about when you have prior and you get tackled to the ground, then you just place it on the ground?
Yeah, no, that's...
And let somebody else worry about it.
Because there clearly has been a change in the interpretation in the last week or so. without warning.
Well, the rules are the same. It's the way they're interpreting
it. That's right. But why do we have a problem? So we had to change it? Is it because they want the ball to be in continuous motion?
Or? I reckon that's it.
I don't know, because it's clearly umpired differently than it was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, so that's not an umpire's fault if they've been told.
Exactly right.
Exactly.
This is the frustration from the fans.
I'm going to ring my mate on
who's
this
your,
one.
Who's
Dan,
your mate?
Dan Richardson.
Can you ring Dan?
Yeah.
And sort that out for us?
Let's get him on, actually.
But I don't like
Let's
that.
Let's grill him.
I don't like it. I get the opportunity and it comes out in the tackle, but I'm big on actually respecting the disposal. And our caller said that. You got two. It's very simple, this game. You got two options once you have the ball.
Yeah.
Handball it or kick it.
Yeah.
Well, there's a whole lot of lazy. I've been
well,
on this
year. Throw it now and not get penalised.
The integrity of disposal has been totally disrespected.
Yeah. Yes. Like,
you should be able to learn to dispose of the ball under pressure, under fatigue, in open space. You need to be able to dispose of the ball legally. Because that's taken away from the game, and that's been a decision by the lawmakers. That's what they want.
Otherwise, they need to get that made-up document that they said, the charter, that just it's always spoken about but never found.
It's on the website.
It should be like a night in the museum. You got to go find it.
There was a glaring example in yesterday's Essendon game. David Zaharakis tackled Fife. Fife ran through the contest, then Zaharakis got him, took him to ground. Fife put the ball on the ground, and it was play on.
It was like rugby union where they just put the ball for the next person.
You've got to come clear out the scrum.
Next phase.
If that's not the perfect tackle and the perfect demonstration of what holding the ball is, I'm not sure what is.
Was the mark taken by Rory Lobb? Should that have been paid?
Yeah, absolutely it should have.
Yes, it should have. We'll get to a break and come back and have some more discussions with Jim, because there's a couple of other games we didn't touch on which we'll want to touch on, and particularly that Richmond Giants one where we should give a bit of love to the Tigers and lament the opportunity lost by the Giants.
Win the game. Don't save the game, Jim.
We'll talk about it after this. Jimmy Budsell, Monday Footy Review on The Breakfast Club.
Just played two games with us. Probably our connection in the back half probably wasn't there as good as it was in the second quarter. I mean, you know, he did light us up in that second quarter, which is pleasing. I think every game he plays, he's going to slot in for us. And he's hungry, he's eager, he's got buy-in, which is great. And if you have that amongst the group, doesn't matter whether you've come from another footy club or you've started out your journey at our club, it's a pleasure to coach.
Jesse Hogan is the topic of conversation there for Leon Cameron after their loss to the Tigers Saturday night at Marvel Stadium by just the four solitary points. Dustin Martin and Liam Baker putting an end to their hopes. Jim, 21 points up. They were early in the game.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
It'll be.
There's an opportunity lost.
It was. That's two games.
Never beaten him in Melbourne, Jim.
That's true.
What are we going to do about that, Jim?
Win the next one.
What happened? Why did they lose it, Jim?
Decision-making in the second half, moments probably then drifting away from what they did really well in the first half, and as Propaganda Boy yelled at me off air, probably trying to look at saving the game instead of still trying to win the game. That was a very top-line brief summary. Do you want to drill down on any of those?
The Giants' defence was under siege in that last quarter.
Yeah, it was.
And the ball just lived in Richmond's forward line. So the opportunities that they had. Richmond were always going to score at some stage because that defence was exhausted. Yeah. Simply exhausted.
They ramped up. So inside 50s, they got reamed in the first three quarters. Contested possession and clearances all heavily in favour of the Giants. In the last quarter, it was flipped on its head.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just... You heard Zane Cordy talking about teams putting on the gas. Yeah. And in fact, he was referring to Richmond, wasn't he? Yeah. Richmond put on the foot on the gas and they just blew the game to bits.
Yeah. And
it was fascinating to watch.
They put the NOS on in Fast and the Furious.
The Nitros.
Yeah. Like round one against the Saints, they'll get a big lesson, the Giants players, about decision-making and game awareness, because that costs you in moments. Because what it does is it sparks the opposition. So long contest down the line on a wing, and you're near the boundary, but you spoil the ball back in bounds by 15 metres.
Yeah, no, that was a bad move.
Just kill the footy. And set up where you've been going really well. You've been going really well at stoppages. Everyone gets set. But then what that does is it sparks Richmond. The momentum comes into it. A few players from Richmond have been down. Geez, actually, we're a chance here. The crowd gets involved. It's all that little knock-on effect. And then the next one, like positioning. And then where you take the ball. Keep going back with handballs from stoppages.
Yep.
You invite the pressure. And what Richmond are always awesome at is they punish you for bad decisions.
They lived off the turnover. For three premierships.
Exactly.
One of the big problems, again, for the Giants was that when the game was there to be won in the last quarter, their best players, particularly midfielders, went missing.
They need finishers.
It's happened before.
Who are the finishers?
But just purely and simply just on numbers alone, they didn't have the players to stand up in the last quarter. It's some damning statistics on some of them.
Got to admire the Tigers, though.
Absolutely.
Didn't
Damien Hardwick rev them up again? Really get them going in the second half?
Tell you what, the passion that Dustin Martin showed on Saturday night, I haven't seen that in him.
And post-game, as the siren went, he was up and about. He was up and about. They knew that. Well, they've got no players, mate. They're remarkable. They've got no players, and they're still winning.
But they're all in the one part of the ground, so they've still got... Grimes was unbelievable. When
Liam Baker was
late.
Unbelievable in that last
quarter.
He
was.
He had 11 possessions, seven of those contested, four or five clearances. He was unbelievable in the last quarter.
There's a text here I just wanted to address. D's have played three of the top eight and won all three. Dogs have played four of the top eight and won three. Stop saying the Dogs haven't beaten anyone. Adam. Well,
That's just saying, Adam White.
That's right, as opposed to you. I'm just saying that the Bulldogs, up until the weekend, had defeated West Coast at Marvel, had defeated Collingwood at the MCG, Brisbane at Ballarat, now throw to that Port Adelaide at the Adelaide Oval. That is a much more significant victory than those other three against top eight sides.
I can tell you the form ladder will back you up. The form ladder says...
Thank you, Daniel.
The Western Bulldogs have had the second easiest draw.
There you go.
And they are second position. The form ladder also says Melbourne have had the easiest draw, and they're on top of the ladder. No, that's interesting. No, it doesn't mean just because they win. It's not got nothing to do with them. It's about their opposition.
But if you're on top of the ladder, isn't everyone easier because they're
below? No, it's the opposition and their performance, Jim. It's got nothing to do with your
play.
At the time you play them.
It's their performance.
No, it's got nothing to do with that team, Jim.
Yeah, but if you're on top of the ladder, everyone you play is worse than you.
No, it's got nothing to do with where that you rank against
them. There's no one above you if you're on top.
It's the cumulative total of the oppositions that you've played and what they're up to. It's got nothing to do with your team. So don't think you know it all, mate.
You're doing a David Parker.
You want a Brownlow... I've got the form ladder.
You got the jugular out.